This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. Joining me today in the JPR studios is Basha Bulat. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in. The newest record is called Good Advice. Information on the disc and on Basha at her website, which is bashabulat.com. You are originally from a place that is pronounced not like it is spelled.
That's true.
It is spelled like Etobicoke.
Yes.
But it is not.
It is Etobicoke, Ontario. It's actually a neighborhood of Toronto. It was its own city and got assimilated into the larger, greater Toronto area when I was a kid.
Did that change the feel of it at all when it became
no.
part of Toronto? Or is it
no,
just...
very little, I think. Well, in some ways, maybe. I'm not sure. I mean, politically, it was not a popular move amongst any of the cities that were kind of amalgamated into Toronto. But it's definitely, for better or for worse, that's the way it is now.
So what were you called before a Torontan? Were you an Etobican?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I was a kid. I was a little kid, so I didn't think about it too much. But perhaps an Etobian, I think, might have been.
You have mentioned...
Now I'm a Torontonian. And I mean, I grew up, obviously, we were still on the Toronto subway. So it really, I feel like I've grown up in Toronto my whole life.
Right. Interestingly, you were saying just before we went on the air that you are actually a schoolmate of Shad.
Yeah, we lived in the same town and we had a lot of friends who were playing music and over the years have become buds. And so it was really fun to be on a show. I'm very, very happy for him. Very proud of him that he's doing Q. He's doing a great job.
You have mentioned in other interviews having a, quote, very typical Polish-Canadian experience growing up. What is that? What is a typical Polish-Canadian experience?
Well, I actually think that I have to rephrase that into a first-generation Canadian experience, maybe not necessarily just a Polish-Canadian experience. I think, like so many people who have family that comes from abroad and immigrates to, whether it's Canada or America, I would assume that it's very similar in America. You have... your identity that you've been born into in your country, but then you have these roots from a place that you may never have been to in your life, but you still identify, it still has a hold on you and influences your identity. And so I've always felt like I'm almost like a hyphen or something, you know, in those words, Polish-Canadian, because, but I think that is kind of the very nature of being Canadian. I think most people from Canada, I would say the majority of us, come from elsewhere or have roots elsewhere. And they still kind of have an influence on our identity today.
Hmm. Yeah. So did home life when you were young have a very Polish feel to it?
I would say it was a real half and half. I mean, certainly my mother came to Canada because she really wanted to live in Canada and wanted her kids to be Canadian. And so I grew up speaking English at home. Hmm. But I do speak a little bit of Polish. I'm always working on it. But of course, like the roots that I have and the ties that I have really come on the cultural side, in the sense of not necessarily, you know, nationality or background or things like that, but, you know, traditions like for holidays at Christmas or the music, the food, of course, was very, very typical. Lots of pierogi, lots of goulash, lots of bigos. Yeah.
And a musical family, too.
Yeah, my mom taught piano and classical guitar when I was growing up, and my brother and I were very profoundly influenced by her and by sort of the fact that we had music in the house all the time. And she was extremely supportive of whatever kind of creative venture that we wanted to embark on. So my brother played percussion and actually plays drums on my first three records.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
As your music started to come across the border and we started to become aware of it, one of the things that tended to occur a lot are photos of you with the auto harp.
Yes.
Right? You were like the auto harp lady. But when you first started making music, if I understand correctly, you were playing bass.
I was playing piano from the age of three. And then in high school, I was playing everything. Anything that they would let me get into in high school. I was really lucky in Etobicoke. We had a great music program. That was one of the great things about my school. And so I was in choir. I was in the stage band playing saxophone and another band playing bass. I played the upright bass in the youth orchestra. I played the flute in a different youth orchestra. I was obsessed with just, I was that I was that one weirdo in the hallway early in the school, like whenever they would allow, you know, early on your parents would drop you off, you know, school started maybe at 9 and I would get in at 7:30 whenever my mom could drop me off, and I would just be there playing the guitar in the end of the hallway, things like that.
How many of those instruments have stuck? How many do you still claim to play?
Well, claim, yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like I could play anything if I set my mind to it, not necessarily to a virtuosic level. But on my records, I play guitar, I've played bass, I've played keyboards, I've played auto harp, obviously. What else do I play on this record? I play a little bit of like a hammered dulcimer. On this record, I also play charango, which is like a 10-string instrument from the Andes region. So it's Bolivia, Peru.
David Wax from David Wax Museum plays one, I believe.
Oh, he plays charango
as his primary instrument.
Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing. I didn't realize that. That's fantastic.
Basha Bulat is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. The new record, which we will talk about in a few moments, is called Good Advice. BashaBulat.com is her website. What do you want to play first for us?
Well, why don't I play the title track? I'll do an acoustic rendition of Good Advice.
Awesome.
Well, any sense I had is gone. On the open field you had me run. Where was the light we had before? I don't know why I ask at all. I keep on talking carelessly. I look in books and magazines, thinking a word could be enough. You look at me, I'm burning up. When I hear your good advice, I'm starting something. Your good advice, I keep running from it. I didn't ask and I didn't want it. In an empty room, you pardon me. When all around us whispering, what we have now, anyone's guess. So just be rude, all your kindness. And you give it out so easily. Then now I drown in I can't be helped or even hurt. And every word makes me feel worse. When I hear your good advice, I'm starting something. Your good advice, I keep running from it. I shouldn't ask since I never want. Any sense I had at all is gone. On the open field you had me run. Where was the light we had before? Oh, I don't know why I ask at all. If a pardon isn't what I want, I can't be helped or even hurt. By all this good advice I've heard, oh, your good advice, I've started something. I should have known that I didn't want it. I never hear it, I keep on running. I didn't ask it, I can't be pardoned.
That is Basha Bulat live today on Jefferson Public Radio. Music from the brand new record called Good Advice. Information at BashaBulat.com. Well, I waited until after folks could hear some lyrics before I made yet another mention of the fact that this one is being referred to as your breakup record. Now, going back a little bit, Tall, Tall Shadow, hugely successful.
Thank you.
This thing nominated for not only a Juno, the Canadian Grammys, but also the Polaris Prize, which is a very big deal. So congratulations all of that success. Were you concerned about making a follow-up to that record with as well as it had done?
Not really. I think every record, the main concern is really just, do I believe what I'm singing? Do I believe myself when I hear myself on the playback, and what the words mean to me at that time, or if there's some kind of truth in it? And so I think there wasn't really any. I don't know, in terms of a follow up. I mean, I guess I have never really thought about records in that way, because my first album, when it came out, it was something I had recorded back when I was still in university, and I used my student loans to just make a document of what I was doing at the time, and I had never anticipated. I mean, of course, growing up in a house of music, you know, and knowing so many people who play music, but never as their full-time job, I just assumed music was something I was always going to do with my life, but never assumed anyway, or was presumptuous enough to think that other people would want to hear it. So
people do.
I'm finding that out, and I take none of it for granted. But I do think that the important thing is, just as long as I believe what I'm singing, then if other people resonate with it, then it'll feel like the right thing to have put out in the world. Yeah.
I mean, you did do a couple of things differently. There's a bigger band, a bigger sound. It's a collection of pop tunes.
Yeah, it's very pop, the way I would do it, but...
Which is what, like sort of melancholy pop?
It's definitely, I don't know, there's something about it that, I don't know, well, I guess we'll see. I guess when I hear it, I just think, yeah, that's how I would do a pop song. But I don't know if it's how everyone would do a pop song. But.
Tell me about this book called The Gift.
Oh, I love that.
And how it has influenced you in terms of being in front of people performing.
Wow. How did you? You're good. I don't know how you found this out about me. I love this book. It's an incredible book, actually, about the idea of what, when you're making something in any kind of art form, that the essence of that cannot be bought or sold. That's kind of the principal question of it. And it comes to no conclusions. But it really has a beautiful few chapters on the idea of when we first started out as in societies, or early societies, and still there are societies like this today, the idea of gift culture, and how cultural artifacts and elements in our lives have more value the more they're passed on, the more that more people share in them. And it's nothing really to do with a perceived value in an economic sense. It's really based on an exchange. A gift has to be given, a gift has to be received. It has to come from a very different place than other kinds of exchanges. And so, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of chapters in this book. How has it influenced performance? Well, I do think that it's reciprocal in the way that gifts always are. I mean, the reason for giving a gift to someone is because your gift is their response or their emotions when they receive it. And so I definitely think about this book a lot, of course. And I know a lot of people do, but it's amazing that you... no one's ever asked me that. I'm kind of floored.
Well, and, you know, today when it comes to music or the creation of art, so much of it is sort of ethereal. It disappears. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, we can capture it. We have recordings that last forever. But also the value of those recordings has dropped through the floor as everybody trades and downloads and gets things for free, so that the value that's really now found in the creation of music are these experiences that you are creating for people 200 nights a year as you're out on tour, and every one of them is slightly different. So it's not the same as going into the studio and leaving this one lasting mark.
Yeah, well, I mean, I almost wonder if it's possible to leave, in the grand scheme of things, an eternally lasting mark. And I also think, you know, we're in such an interesting time right now, because I don't think it's just music. I think so much is changing in terms of, you know, I don't think it's because people don't value records. I do think that the world is just a rapidly changing place, and it's so difficult. I mean, I'm really happy that people can find my music if they couldn't necessarily afford to buy every record they want to hear, that they can hear it and that they can come to a show or they can experience and they can share it in different ways. I've never felt that people don't value music or that they don't value records. I definitely think that I realize more and more with time that, yeah, just staying open to how the world is changing. But I think that everybody's individual experience is still very strong and personal and very unique in terms of how they experience things, whether it's just, you know, through their headphones or with a group of people at a show.
Yeah. I think it's said about radio that this very conversation we're having, as it's broadcast out, is going to keep going forever.
Right.
And at some point, if technology exists out there to convert it to sound, someone would be able to hear it. On the flip side of it, 1,000 years from now, when they take core samples of our landfills, they will find Sam Cooke records,
yeah,
perfectly preserved under dozens of feet of trash, probably, and
yeah,
Elvis records.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wish that somebody wouldn't put those in the landfill, because those are right. Good records.
There's one other really interesting thing I want to ask you about, and that is this Tibet house concert.
Yeah.
Because the lineup of this is very odd. Philip Glass, Iggy Pop, Sharon Jones, Basha Bulat.
Mm-hmm. FKA Twigs.
How do you get on that lineup?
What is this concert for? You get asked by Philip Glass, and Tibet House is a, which is already a mind-blowing experience to begin with, to be invited by like, a musical
does he
hero.
Call, like, does he call you up and say, Basha, this is Philip Glass?
You get a little letter. Tibet House is promoting the cultural institutions of Tibet. The one in the U.S. is an organization, yeah, interested in promoting the culture and music, of course, and art. So there was also an incredible Tibetan singer on the bill. There were Tibetan monks singing, and there was an incredible Tibetan singer, Dechen Shakdagse, who had come in to sing with the Patti Smith Band. So Lenny Kay backing up this incredible singer from Tibet. It was an incredible group of people to raise money. It happens yearly, and it raises money for this organization that promotes awareness of Tibetan culture. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a real thrill to be a part of it.
Yeah. Do you have to be someone who has previously expressed support for Tibetan art and culture, or is it almost like a random, they just find people that they think are compelling and interesting?
I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Okay.
I certainly am interested.
Yeah, right.
But I think you'd be hard for us to find people who aren't interested. It's, yeah. I mean, it was such a beautiful night, and I feel like I can't believe it really happened. It was a beautiful night. Yeah.
Well, the new record called Good Advice is a wonderful collection of songs, and much like your last release, the more you listen, the more they burrow in as earworms. So congratulations on another great collection of music.
Thank you.
How's the progress on the Polish record?
Oh my gosh, it's getting there. Well, this is the problem, is that my Polish is pretty bad, so I've got to keep working on it. It's a longer term project. It started out as something I had actually recorded some stuff in Poland, so I do have a bunch of tracks, but.
And are you trying to create a Basha Bulat record sung in Polish, or mm-hmm. are you trying to create a Polish music collection?
Well, you know, when you're starting to make stuff, you never really try and put it too much into a box. You kind of see where it goes. And so what it will end up being is slowly revealing itself to me. I think I have to go back. I was working on it in Warsaw. So I think the real plan for me is at some point this year, I'd like to go back there and keep working and keep writing and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming in and visiting with us.
Oh, thank you.
It's been great. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Basha Bulat is my guest today live here on Jefferson Public Radio. The brand new record is called Good Advice. Information on the album and on Basha at her website, which is bashabulat.com. You'll find a spelling of it and some photos and audio of our live session today up on our website later this afternoon at ijpr.org. You've got one more for us.
Yeah.
What are you going to play?
This is a song called Fool.
Find me when our house is empty. I'm already in my new town. From here I can hear you laughing. I know the sound very well. I'm still your fool. I'm still your fool. I'm still your fool. I'm still your fool. Tried to find a way to show you. Told the story to our friends. Now that I'm still your fool. I'm still your fool. I'm still your fool. I'm always first to break. Friendly or foolish, you tell me. No, sir. Surprises, please. Only your echo following. Tried to find a way to show you. I can't pin you down again. Now that we all know the punchline. Only you know if I am. Am I still your fool?
That is Fool. It's live from Basha Bulat from the brand new record called Good Advice here on Jefferson Public Radio. BashaBulat.com is her website for more information. Basha, this has been great. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.